poquito de lunes a jueves. You
the safari park. You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? I think not. Hey, that's a sound we're all familiar with. And depending on whether we're 9 or 90, it will evoke very different feelings in us. The less you have of anything, food, water, money, time, the more we notice how fast we're eating or drinking or burning through it. The passage of time, or the perceived passage of time, is kind of a fluid thing, isn't it? Kind of like a bouncing ball. If you smash it off the pavement as hard as you can, those first few bounces will take a while. But as it loses energy, the bounces shorten and it becomes a blur. And then finally, it's still. Sustainability is a big word these days. It's often kicked around by people who have no idea what it means, because everything is sustainable if properly managed. Everything. Except time. There are no refills on that resource. How much time do we have? Well, if we plan on making it to, say, 75, we've got about 27,000 days to get our shit done. 75 years seems like a long time. But how much time do we really get for ourselves to do what we want to do instead of what we have to do? Everybody has to sleep. Most of us need about 8 hours, so cross off 26 years or 9,000 days that we spend unconscious. Now we're down to 50 years and 18,000 days. By the way, what is it with guys, especially executive types, who use the amount of sleep they need as a measure of machismo? How many times have I been on elevators headed for an office and heard a couple of suits, or maybe three, bragging about how little sleep they need?
Well, 6 hours does it for me.
Well, I'm good to go on 4.
I'm at the gym at 4, the station at 5, and the office at 6:30.
I've always wanted to say, really? Then you must have a tiny dick, because dicks grow at night. Are you a pin dick? Are you? You can find some good laughs on elevators, especially crowded ones. Everyone has their personal space, right? Mine is several hectares, unless you're a pointy chick. Then, well, my space is your space, mademoiselle. But how weird is it when we're packed into an elevator full of total strangers and everyone is as close as you would be for a slow dance? And what's job number one? Don't look at anyone. Because if you look, you may have to speak. Or, as sometimes happens, a look can be construed as a challenge. Yeah, it's really a thing with bipeds. I was once in a Costa Rican rainforest teeming with some kind of monkeys. And the tour guide warns us, do not make eye contact with the monkeys because they consider it a challenge. Just to be a wise ass, I picked out one nearby monkey and gave him my best under-medicated, outpatient Charles Manson psycho stare. A look that would have most people dialing 911. In a few seconds, the monkey grew quite agitated. A few seconds more, and he whistled up some of his punk friends for a little throwdown with yours truly. I had this humongous strobe light on my camera and let him have a couple of bursts right in their retinas. Then I got the fuck out of there. But damn if it isn't the truth. How many bar fights begin with these 5 slurred words? What are you looking at? So back to the elevator. And elevators are time bandits too, aren't they? More wasted time. I was working at a TV network, and a guy I knew, he was a graphic artist. He had the most bizarre sense of humor of anyone I've ever met. We called him the Emperor, because you never knew when he would lapse into a character he was fond of doing. A kind of Caligula-style degenerate Roman emperor who might say something like,
General Maximus, you must quash the uprising in the colony. Kill all the men and bring the males under 14 to me.
The Emperor was a veteran of over 300 acid trips. I never took any drugs, so I've nothing to base this on, but it's an acid, right? So does it eat away at part of your brain? Because I had to believe something had gone askew in the Emperor's gray matter to make it work the way it did. The guy had no filter whatsoever. If he thought it was funny, he'd say it. One morning, we get on the elevator at the world's largest television network. And who's in there with us? The three top suits. CEO, president, and chairman of the board. I actually knew one of them, a little, and we said hello. I looked at the Emperor and began to sweat. I had a 17-story ride to my floor, and I'm thinking, God, don't let him say anything, and if he does, please don't let me laugh or acknowledge that we're friends. I can see the wheels turning in the Emperor's head, greased by 300 doses of lysergic acid. He clears his throat, looks at the CEO, and says, "Pardon me, which floor is Nambla on?" Nambla was the North American Man Boy Love Association, a club for pedophiles, and at that time, it was headline news. All three high-powered suits look at the Emperor with a mix of shock and revulsion. He just stares back at them, blinking his eyes as if he asked them for the time of day. At that instant, the doors opened. The Emperor shrugs like, "What's the matter with those guys?" He exits, and the door closes. The CEO looks at me and says, "Do you know him?" I told him I thought he might work in the art department. Then, my floor, salvation. So anyway, we were down to 50 years and 18,000 days, right? And unfortunately, most of us must work to live and not the other way around. So if we start a career at, say, 25 and retire at 65, let's conservatively estimate an 8-hour day and throw in an hour commute, that's 9 hours a day for 250 days a year, doing stuff we really don't want to do. That accrues to another 6,250 days on the job. Now we're down to only about 33 years to call our own. Since most of us are barely conscious before age 5, it's safe to slice off another 5 years, isn't it? Now we're working with 28 years. That's a long way from the 75 we thought we had. And how about school? Was school what you really wanted to be doing? And what about all that fucking homework and studying? Let's say 6 hours of school per day at 9 months a year, plus an hour homework and studying for 16 years. Again, a very conservative estimate. Now we're down to just 26 years. And what about sick days, hungover days, days when you're laid up with a sprained ankle or the flu? Let's say 5 days a year over the course of a lifetime for someone in good health. Now we're down to 25 years. That's only 8,800 days to maybe do what the hell you want. But will you get those? Hell no. First, you gotta do what you gotta do. And doing what you've got to do is going to further erode a lot of that me time. Wash the dishes, make the bed, change the oil, shop for groceries, drive your old man or your kid to the doctor or school, paint the house, mow the lawn, and if you live in even a middling-sized city, don't forget traffic. Traffic can swell your commute and every errand you run by a considerable amount. And let's not leave out weather. How often are we snowed in or rained out? Or if you're in Beijing or New Delhi, you can't even go outside because the air is too toxic to breathe. And what about all the other nonsense we really don't want to do but have to do? How much of our lives do we waste? Eliminating waste. Then showering, hair, clipping toenails, makeup application and removal. Most people wolf down breakfast and lunch, and too often dinner is spent arguing with someone. How often is a meal all it can and should be? And on it goes. So when we extract all the bullshit that we need to do or have to do, how much time is left for what we really want to do? For fishing or skiing or strumming your strat or just sitting on your ass picking lint out of your belly button, if that's your pleasure? How much time do we get to indulge our passions? Not very much. Which brings us to the title of this episode, The Time Bandits. Who are they? And where are they? Answer, they're assholes, and they're everywhere. Assholes who are either paid to waste your time or waste it because they can or just out of sheer ignorance. The penalty should not be adjusted according to motive. A Louisville slugger to the back of the head, swung with the force of Bonds or McGuire, should do the trick. Time bandits are fucking thieves, and they should be dealt with as such. Why so severe? To make an example of them. And because if some son of a bitch mugs you, you can probably replace the skrilla he takes from you. But as we established earlier, time is not a sustainable resource. How much time do assholes waste for us in our attempt just to get somewhere? Let's start with air travel. The TSA is out of control, tossing blue-haired old ladies out of wheelchairs so they can fondle their brittle privates, while we wait and wait. And once on the plane, how many days or weeks do frequent flyers spend buckled in on the tarmac waiting? For what? Well, usually it's a clear runway. That's not fate. That's somebody's fault. Somebody who didn't properly manage the traffic. There's only one legit reason for air travel delays, and that's weather. There are no others. None. But the snakes in the corner office will cry, mechanical failure, bullshit. Mechanical failure is a lie, on any level, in any industry. Mechanical devices do not fail. People do. The guy who fucked up the wiring, the clown who didn't torque that bolt right, the one who didn't switch out the fuel filter, or maybe the engineer who just came up with a shitty design that nobody should have approved. Some years ago, when wings were falling off of jets, some public relations spokeshole coined the phrase metal fatigue, as if a panel of aircraft aluminum missed its nap time and so decided to snap like a stale cookie. Unacceptable bullshit. If the mill or the metallurgist had done his job right, the metal would not become fatigued. Law firms can get sick rich with nice big class actions, yes? You see these commercials constantly, law firms searching for people who've been harmed or killed by some crappy prescription drug or a hip replacement that rusted. They collect enough of them, total up the damages, and kerpow, some corporation gets pummeled in a sawdust, and the lawyers get rich. Take an Airbus or 737 going New York to L.A. That plane will hold plenty of folks making plenty of jing. And say that plane is delayed 3 or 4 or 5 hours. How many meetings do those business travelers miss? How many sales calls are canceled? What's the dollar value of a plane load of high-income people who have lost a chunk of income and opportunity due to the airline's fuck-ups? Good question for an attorney, right? Well, the Take No Shit Dojo has many senseis from many disciplines, and a couple of listeners have just signed on as in-house senseis / legal counsel. Nick the Knife Riceta and Raf Eduardo. Do you believe those names? They sound like Tony Spumante torpedoes. Can't we make the Time Bandits, airlines included, accountable? Seems like we should. I've had some interface with attorneys, and here's a couple of tips from the dojo. The time to find an attorney is not when you need an attorney. So get one while life is a boat ride, and if you hit some rough water, have a shark on speed dial. The legal system is a snare trap built to suck you in and eviscerate you. You cannot handle it alone. You need someone on your side, and not just someone with a prestige law degree. Somebody with big balls and a mean streak is who you really want. I was once involved in a real estate deal that went sideways. The attorney I was using was a bedwetting wimp. Right next to his law degree on the wall was his certificate of appreciation from the Peace Corps. Not a good sign. And when the shit flew, this candy ass just ran for cover. It got so dicey, Tony Spumante offered to put Joey and Mikey on the case. I politely declined Tony's offer and handled it myself, but had I an attorney with balls, and that can be a female too. I once had a very pointy female attorney, and she was as lethal as a minigun. Had my attorney had balls, the situation would never have progressed so far. So a tip from the dojo. A fancy law degree does not a kick-ass attorney make. Get one with cojones, or even one that's intimidating. They called John Gotti the Teflon Don. For years, the DAs lost every case against him, and I believe that was because of Gotti's attorney, a guy named Bruce Cutler. Bruce looked like he could bench press a Buick, and his attitude was aggressive as hell. Eventually, some judge refused to allow Bruce to represent Gotti, and that's when they finally took him down. Sounds like a bullshit play. Shouldn't someone be allowed to choose their own attorney? We're surrounded by time bandits at work, too. The meeting freaks. Oh, they love to have meetings, don't they? Meetings, and then let's meet again to discuss the meeting. In person or Skype, it doesn't matter. How's business? Oh, awful. Business is down. But meetings are way up. The last time I moved, the biggest hassle was not the moving or packing or unpacking. It was AT&T. The single worst, quote, customer service, unquote, experience of my life. I spent hours and hours on the phone with moron after moron, simply trying to get the phone and internet. Now that asshole in AT&T customer service, he's being paid to jack me around. But when I'm battling him or her and listening to this... I'm not only not getting paid, I'm losing money. And that irreplaceable resource, time. So when it happened for AT&T, I kept a log. And I sent their pencil-necked CEO an invoice for my time. Shouldn't we be compensated when some corporation needlessly wastes our time? For the telephone time wasters, I'd actually prefer a remedy that I once read about in a thriller. I cannot recall the damn title of the book, but the premise was sweet. The story was about some Blofeld-style villain who found a way to send about 200 amps through a phone line. What a concept. What a motivator for telephone time bandits to get their fucking lazy, incompetent asses in gear and show some real customer service.
Customer service?
Imagine the improvement in service we'd all get after a few call centers were charbroiled by disgruntled customers. Having kids exposes you to legions of time bandits, other kids' parents. It happens through school and playdates. Is the playdate thing just an L.A. phenomenon? When I was a kid in New York, there were no playdates. Every street had mobs of kids. You wanted to play? You went outside. There were kids. You played. In the street, where you're supposed to play. You dodged automobiles, and if you weren't fast and careful, you got crushed under a garbage truck. Darwinian. No do-overs. No helmets. And blissfully, no adults. Helicopter parents are a fucking nightmare. I predict a huge spike in patricide and matricide in the coming generation because helicopter parents deprive kids of a vital part of childhood. Adventure. I learned to ride a two-wheeler, no training wheels, when I was about 3 years old. And my old man taught me by getting me started, then running alongside and hanging onto the bike seat until I found enough balance and speed to go it alone. A few times I crashed and got a little banged up, but I didn't care. I wanted to ride that two-wheeler, just like my older brother and the big kids. And I swear to God, even now, One of the greatest thrills of my life was the feeling I got when Dad let go of that seat, and I just kept going and going and going. Holy shit, the elation of achievement, of doing it all by yourself. And I see these parents that hover over their kids, supervising and monitoring every fucking waking moment of their young lives, and I think to myself, if one morning little Hunter or Emily wakes you up by plunging a 6-inch chef's knife deep into your aorta, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised or sorry. Every encounter has to be scheduled and arranged, and someone has to drive. For some reason, many parents of kids my older daughter played with were assholes, and you find yourself forced into spending time with people you'd rather punch than speak with. Those are time bandits. I got much luckier with the parents of friends of my younger daughter. Some of them have become close friends. I wonder why that is. Why would one group mostly be a bucket of assholes and the other pretty cool people? In L.A., you see no more kids on the street than you see wild boars. So is this Playday bullshit regional or cultural? Hey, speaking of wild boars, there's a really amusing story about radioactive wild boars that have taken over the town of Fukushima, Japan. Seems the boars can't read Geiger counters. So when everybody split after the meltdown, the boars came out of the mountains and took over. Some people are starting to move back in, and the boars are not happy about it. I wonder how they know the boars are radioactive. Do they glow in the dark? Do they look like zombie pigs with flesh hanging off them and an extra crazed look in their beady eyes? If you kill one, do you have to barbecue it before you eat it, or is it pre-cooked from the nuking it gets? You know, when I walk into a restaurant after sitting down, the first thing I do is check the time. If in the first 5 minutes I don't have a menu and a drink in front of me, I leave. No exceptions. Because in most cases, it doesn't get better. So you have to cut your losses and keep checking that clock. I was once at a trendy joint in Malibu, and on this night the place was not very crowded, maybe half full. I was distracted and waited longer than my 5 minutes for the menus and drinks. Finally they arrived. Then I checked the time. 25 minutes later, no waiter, no sign of the waiter. On my way out the door, the manager said I owed him money for the drinks. I told him he owed me money for my time, and I left. You find time bandits everywhere. The guy doing 45 in the left lane. Or how about the chatty shoppers? Oh, you see them in the supermarket, post offices, convenience stores. They don't go to shop. They go to make friends. They don't give a shit how many people are behind them. People that actually have lives and don't regard a supermarket as a social event. They have to stand there and tell the cashier about their gallbladder operation or their grandkids' GPA. Then they invariably pay by check and then balance their fucking account at the check stand and then conduct a little banking too. They always ask for cash back. When there's an ATM only 30 feet away, and it's never $20 or $50 or $100, no, it's, "May I have $18.27 cash back?" At a dry cleaner recently, some bimbo is grilling the owner about stain removal. She had some shitty-looking blouse that looked as if she crawled into a Goodwill box to get it. And it's got some nasty stains. Stains that looked as if they'd come to life and dance under one of those purple germ lights. And she has to know whether the dry cleaner can remove the stain. The dry cleaner asks her what made the stain. Of course, she didn't know. And the dry cleaner answers her, honestly, some stains will come out and others just don't.
"You mean you can't guarantee to get my stain out?"
"Well, I could if I knew what made the stain."
"So you don't guarantee your work?"
"I do if I know what I'm working with, but there's no way to be sure."
"I need a guarantee."
What she needed was for two black pajamaed ISIS guys to burst into the store and saw off her head with a Rambo knife. That's what she needed. After 10 minutes of this shit, this idiot says,
"I'll take it to my friend. He guarantees his work."
And she leaves. Since Isis did not appear, I hoped she would be T-boned by a cement truck on her way home. Have I left out a major time bandit? I have. Uncle Suck. When there's a draft on, Uncle Suck will not just take your money, he'll take your life. Draft aside, how much time and money do we spend on tax prep? Tax prep, let's put this in perspective. Say some shitbag holds you up at gunpoint. He wants your money, but when you hand him your wallet, that's not good enough. He wants to know how you got that money and how much more do you have stashed elsewhere. He keeps you at gunpoint until his accountants can check your story, and then the same shitbag comes back every year to hold you up again. And if Uncle Suck isn't drafting you or taxing you, he's making more demands on you, like jury duty. The system is tragically flawed, and the first fix is to have professional jurors who are well paid and understand the law, not a jury of so-called peers with nothing better to do. Last time I was called and I told the judge I didn't believe in the system, I thought he was going to shit blood all over the bench because what you're really telling him is, I don't believe in you. The whole Megillah pisses me off, beginning with having to address some guy in a robe as Your Honor. How do we know he's honorable? We can call the leader of the free world Mr. Trump or Mr. President or Sir. Isn't Your Honor presumptuous, excessive, and transcending respect into the sycophantic? It's medieval. And so that brings us around to our next episode, which will be bonus episode number 3. By the way, if anyone is wondering why this is episode number 14, I'm kind of superstitious about the number 13. And bonus episode 3 is not to be missed because in it, we'll take no shit to the next level. Not just taking no shit, but when appropriate, giving shit, lots of it, to those you deem deserving of it. We'll also finally reveal the location where men can meet women, that even tops Dick Masterson's skating rink. In these places, there's no cover charge. You don't have to know how to skate, and there's probably one right near you. Bonus episodes are available only to Patreonies, so check it out. As always, my friends, it's been a blast hanging with you. Thanks so much for stopping by the dojo. Drop us an email at thatlarryshow@gmail.com or a voicemail at 302-71-LARRY. Let us know who or what's bugging you, and we might just have a sensei who can help you kick ass and take names. Get at me on Twitter, and if you like what you hear, slide over to iTunes and lay 5 stars on the dojo. And the next time you find yourself waiting on hold or waiting for a menu, remember, they're stealing chunks of your life. So slam down that phone or walk out. We'll see you next time at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And until then, take no shit.